Hello, welcome to Reflections on the Scriptures. My name is Murray Shanks. I'm the pastor of Foster Baptist Church. Do you want to see? That's a question that's hung over many a person. Do you want to see? Do you really want to understand what's going on? Do you want to see life as it really is, or are you happy to simply exist in a fantasy world, believing whatever you want to believe? Do you want to see? As John Eldridge writes, Neo takes the pill. Lucy steps through the wardrobe. Aladdin rubs the lamp. Elisha prays that the eyes of his servant would be opened. Peter, James, and John follow Jesus up the Mount of Transfiguration. All of them discover that there's far more going on here than meets the eye. The first time I saw The Fellowship of the Ring, the first of the Lord of the Rings movie trilogy, I felt that I was seeing something that spoke of an eternal truth. And that feeling only grew stronger as I went on to devour the books. I even read The Silmarillion, the prehistory to The Lord of the Rings. Not that I ever thought that this was true historically, but rather it spoke of an eternal truth that went beyond mere facts and figures, beyond what I could see or touch, beyond the physical world that I live in. Of course, I'm speaking about myth, a story that brings you a sense of the eternal, a story that awakens your heart and eyes to the deep truths of life. Have you ever wondered if, just maybe, there may be more going on than you realise? It's very hard for us 21st century humans. We know so much. We have access via the net to virtually the sum total of human knowledge. Within a matter of seconds, less than a second, we can ask a question through our handheld device and receive the answer. And of course, with AI, this is only accelerating. I remember a couple of years ago, our dishwasher stopped working and Louise jumped on Google and asked how to fix a dishwasher. Within no time, she had diagnosed the problem and was able to say with some certainty that the inlet float valve was the problem and it needed to be replaced. And she was right. We purchased a new inlet float valve, installed it as instructed, problem solved. We really are just so smart. We have all the answers, don't we? Don't we? I'd like to think that we have all the answers, but I can't help feeling that maybe our interpretation of events and our understanding of the universe may just be a little off. There may be more going on than we thought. I guess that's why we human beings keep writing stories or myths that try to communicate this universal truth, that things are not as they seem. Dorothy wakes up to find herself in a world that is now full of colour. A world of straw men and fairies and lions who speak. She whispers to her little friend, Toto, I don't think we're in Kansas anymore. Alice falls through the rabbit hole into Wonderland. Neo wakened from the Matrix to discover that it's not 1999 but 2199, and things are definitely not as they seem. Jacob falls into a dream, or maybe he wakes up from a dream, to discover that there's a ladder resting on the earth with its top reaching to heaven. The angels of God are climbing up and down the ladder, and Jacob says, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. He was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. Jacob and Dorothy and Alice and Neo all discover that things are not as they seem. There's more going on here than meets the eye. There are lots of words written in the Bible, a lot of words, but they can be summed up with a few short statements. Jesus did this when he said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your mind, and love your neighbour as yourself. That's the Ten Commandments in summary. You check it out sometime, Exodus 20. First three commandments are about loving God. The next seven are about loving others who are made in the image of God. Or in other words, it's all about God. That's one of the short statements that we could use to sum up the message of the Scriptures. It's all about God. I don't just mean the Scriptures. I mean, obviously, they're all about God. I mean everything, the whole lot, the universe and everything in it. It's all about God. Another, and this is what I want us to think about today as we look at chapter 3 of James, is that things are not as they seem. That's one of the essential messages of Scripture. Things are not as they seem. There are two parts to our reality. The first part is seen, We can touch it, feel it. It seems very real, and it is real. The second part is unseen. We can't touch it. We can't even reach out and touch it. It seems unreal. Yet the Bible says that this part of reality is the most real. The Apostle Paul wrote, "So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal." So that's 2 Corinthians 4, verse 18. So with that backdrop, with a recognition that things are not as they seem, and that the unseen is more real than the seen, I want us to read this passage from the book of James. James 3, verse 13 says, "Who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. But if you harbour bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. Things are not as they seem." It would seem that there are lots of places to find wisdom. As I said before, we're so smart. I mean, we can do so many incredible things. We can take someone's heart out and put it in someone else's body. We can make a so-called ugly person beautiful, or help someone who is apparently infertile conceive and give birth to a child. We really are so clever. I guess the question then is, what does wisdom, or does wisdom have anything to do with being clever? Does wisdom have anything to do with being smart? You know, I was having dinner with someone a while back who was very smart. Well, I guess he was. He told me a number of times, "I'm a really smart guy." That's what he said. And his job certainly seemed to indicate that he was a pretty sharp guy. I mean, he designed hearing implants. Yet as we chatted, he revealed that his life was full of conflict and disorder. He didn't want it to be that way. That's just how it was. His relationships appeared to be chaotic and full of conflict. He wanted to resolve the conflicts. And he even said at one point, "I should be able to work this out. I'm a really smart guy." Now, I guess that there are lots of people who are in exactly the same position. In a lot of ways, as he spoke, I thought to myself, this is the postmodern human condition. I should be able to work this out. We should be able to stamp out injustice. We, people everywhere, should be able to all live comfortable, productive lives. We should be able to ensure that financial depressions and a global financial crisis simply never occur again. We should be able to do this because, well, we human beings are really smart. The thing is, we can't. The issue isn't how smart we are. The issue is how wise we are. Things are not as they seem. It would seem as though wisdom is directly linked to intelligence and knowledge. Certainly that's the message that the world sends. How many of us are smart enough? There are probably not that many, and certainly on a global scale, as the rich nations of the West move further and further from the rest of humanity in their knowledge and skills, it would seem then that wisdom and knowledge will only be available to the rich. Somebody once said, "Knowledge is knowing what to say. Wisdom is knowing when to say it." Another great quote, which I love, is, "Knowledge is knowing that tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is knowing you don't put it in fruit salad." The Bible's teaching on wisdom is a little more nuanced. In the scriptures, we find that wisdom is not connected with intelligence, but rather morality. Now, in the Bible, the opposite of the wise person is the fool, the foolish person. It says in Psalm 14, "The fool says in his heart, there is no God." So the first step towards wisdom is to acknowledge that there is a God. In the book of Job, one of the earliest books of the Bible, in Job 28, we read this, "But where can wisdom be found? Where does understanding dwell? The fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to shun evil is understanding. So wisdom, true wisdom, is intertwined not with intelligence, but with fearing God and shunning evil. First verse of our passage today says, verse 13, who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. James is asking, who thinks they're wise? Who thinks they've got things worked out? Who thinks they understand the ways of the world, the ways of faith? We'd all like to think that we're wise and we've got understanding. I know I do. I don't want to live foolishly or lack understanding. I want to live out of wisdom. Well, James says, the proof is seen in your life and the way you live your life. That's where the real proof lies. So what does wisdom look like? When I stand at one of the crossroads, the thousands of crossroads of life, when I need to make a decision, when I need wisdom, what does it look like? What does wisdom look like? What does it look like? Well, it seems that wisdom is so closely tied to our behaviour. It would be fair to say the attributes and qualities of true wisdom are the same as those of the godly life. And that's easy to see. That's great because the scriptures give us so many lists of what the godly life or the wise life looks like. It's as though the reflection of the godly life is wisdom and vice versa. The wise life is a godly life. In Galatians 5, Paul says, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. And then in Ephesians, he said, be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. And then to the Philippians, Philippians 4 verse 8, he said, finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. That's the picture of godly wisdom which the Bible gives us. When you stand at one of those big, important crossroads of life, when you need to make a decision, when you need wisdom, make your decision in line with what you're told about the godly life in the scriptures. And I guarantee your decision will prove to be a wise decision. James then goes on to give us a picture of worldly wisdom. And this is where we need to think mythically. This is where we need to think beyond our everyday experiences and try to see the bigger picture of what's really going on here. Worldly wisdom is from the devil. James says, this is verse 14, but if you harbour bitter envy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. Do you hear what this is saying? When your behaviour exhibits bitter envy, selfish ambition and disorder, you're operating not from true wisdom, wisdom from God, but rather from a type of wisdom that comes from the world. This kind of wisdom is in contrast to true wisdom, and it's godless at its very source. This kind of wisdom evaluates everything and everyone by the standards of this world, and it makes personal gain life's highest goal. This kind of wisdom is unspiritual, and it's completely opposed to all things spiritual. It views life from the limited viewpoint of this world rather than from God's perspective. You know, a very good example of this, I think, is the abortion debate that has raged for decades around the world and is still at the very centre of, for instance, the current US presidential election. Listening to the various sides, it becomes clear to me that for the let's call them unspiritual, that is, for those who don't even acknowledge a spiritual reality, it just seems fine for there to be about 80 to 90,000 abortions a year just in Australia. That's not globally, that's just in Australia. That is about 250 per day. Of course it seems fine to kill a handful of cells smaller than the head of a pin. It only seems wrong if you acknowledge that there is a God and that every human being is made in his image and that we are spiritual beings from the moment of conception. Only then does abortion's true nature become apparent. Remember, keep thinking mythically. James says that this type of wisdom is earthly, unspiritual, and of the devil. That's a big deal. That means that so much of what seems wise and practical and the right thing to do is simply demonic. And remember that the Greek word that he uses here indicates a fullness that is completely demonic. When you watch The Lord of the Rings or The Matrix or Harry Potter or even the Twilight films, there seems to be a clear delineation between good and evil. Think about the images of the Shire as opposed to those of Mordor. There's no way that you would mistake the intentions of an elderly hobbit with those of an orc. Or, for instance, in Snow White, the delineation between good and evil is equally vivid. Yet in life, things are rarely so clear. James says, when you harbour bitter envy or selfish ambition in your hearts, you're acting from a wisdom that is positively demonic. If you could see yourself from God's vantage point, if you could see the big picture like you were watching yourself in a movie, maybe a mythic movie like The Lord of the Rings, maybe you'd be saying to yourself, run away, don't do that. That's just what the devil wants you to do. Run away. Choose the other path. Life isn't like that, is it? Things aren't always so clear. The things which influence us aren't dressed like evil. Often they're more like glossy magazine covers and slick television ads with well-spoken people who appear so intelligent that they simply must be wise. Wisdom from God is different. Verse 17 from our passage today says, but the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. Let's carefully pull this verse apart to see what it's saying. Verse 17 says, but the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure. Think of something that's pure. What do you see? It's without blemish or defect, isn't it? True wisdom from God is distinctly, uniquely free from any sinful attitude or motive. True wisdom is peace-loving, not just free from conflict with others, but flowing out of an inner peace that only comes from getting right with God. When we operate from godly wisdom, not only will we find peace in our own relationships, but we'll also find within ourselves a longing to become peacemakers, that is, to help others live in peace as well. True wisdom doesn't lead us into disputes, but rather it leads us toward reconciliation and unity. When you come to a crossroad in your life, remember this. The path which leads toward a breaking of unity and a breaking of the peace will often, not always, but often be the path to avoid. Go the other way. Go the way towards peace. Godly wisdom produces people who are considerate. Now, this word, which is translated considerate, is the word that is most often used to describe the disposition of God as king. God is gentle and kind, even though he has every reason to be stern and harsh with us because of our sinfulness and rebellion. He is considerate toward us, for he knows our weakness. In Psalm 103, it said, now this is such an important verse, it says, as a father has compassion on his children, so the Lord has compassion on those who fear him. For he knows how we are formed. He remembers that we are dust. Do you see, he understands how frail and weak we are, better than we do. He understands and knows all about the trauma we've experienced over the course of our life. He heard every harsh and damaging words said to us. And as a result, he knows why we react in situations as we do. We, as his children, should treat others in the same way. That's what godly wisdom looks like. It's compassionate and it emphasizes love over law. Godly wisdom asks, how is this going to affect the other person? Is this decision going to produce a win-win, or is this just about me? Next, godly wisdom is submissive. People operating from godly wisdom come under authority. That's something that the world doesn't teach us, does it? The movies tell us the heroes are the ones who go their own way, ignoring all others and making their own rules. What the movies don't show is the path of destruction that's left in the wake of those so-called heroes. Do you hear the heartbeat of God in all of this? Do you hear the sound of godly wisdom? Humility, peace-loving, considerate, submissive. Next comes full of mercy and good fruit. Godly people are full of mercy. Being full of mercy is all about seeing the best, seeing the very best in others. It's so easy to always see the worst in people. Give people the benefit of the doubt and always see the best in people. That's a challenge, isn't it? Godly wisdom produces fruit that is consistent with all of the above. That is good fruit. Godly wisdom is impartial and sincere. It's both honest and just. And it's untainted by hypocrisy. Finally, James says, peacemakers who sow in peace raise a harvest of righteousness. I don't know about you, but I want to raise a harvest of righteousness. I want to live my life from godly wisdom. If I think mythically, if I start to realize that things are not what they seem, if I start to believe that everything, every decision I make, every word I speak has more significance than I realize, then it changes everything. We always need to remember that there are ultimately only two sources of wisdom, and we so desperately need discernment to recognize them. The Bible makes it pretty clear. Just look at the fruit. When you see envy, selfish ambition, disorder, disunity, that is flowing from worldly wisdom. But when you see purity and peace, people being considerate and submissive to one another, mercy and integrity, there you'll be sure to find godly wisdom. Go that way. Always go the way of godly wisdom. Amen. May the Lord bless you today.